Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This podcast contains graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Now, with that being said, welcome to the Mortal Musings podcast.
Right, let's do this.
So Neil's got a new podcast to add to his list.
Which one?
Wife of Crime.
Oh, yeah.
So apparently I wasn't doing a good enough job. He's gone off and found someone else to tell him these true crime stories. Yeah, Wife of Crime, they're a great podcast. Very similar dynamic to us. You have Jess, she tells the stories and she does an amazing job of it. And then you have Russ there, who is very definitely a bit of comic relief, I'd say.
Yeah, I think Jess has it harder than you because...
Oh, Russ doesn't give a fuck.
Russ is harder to control than myself, I think. But he is funny.
He's very funny.
I'm so happy, but she doesn't edit stuff out what he says.
No, they are amazing together. Please go check them out. Brilliant podcast.
Like, I can't remember what it was. He made me spit my water out. I was having a drink and I couldn't hold it in. But yeah, if you like listening to us,
oh, you'll definitely like them.
I can't see why you wouldn't like them.
That's actually how you found out about them. Was someone we know recommended them, saying, "Have you ever heard of them? They're very similar to you guys."
Yeah. And I can't believe we hadn't heard of them because they're fairly big.
Yeah. They've been going for a while now.
Yeah. Fair play to them. Also, another bit of news. Not as good.
No.
Our Facebook page got hacked. So what this person did, he removed Megan as an admin.
Fucking rude.
Blocked her from the page.
Yeah.
Left me there. Oh no, he took me off admin, but left me in the group.
Yeah, apparently you weren't a threat.
Well, I saw it as more he was doing it to taunt me, like to torture me, because I was seeing what was happening. You couldn't see it, but I could.
The page, yeah, like nothing existed. I searched on Facebook. It had never happened.
And the only reason why I knew something was going on is I got a notification on Facebook saying, "Your ad is now live." And I was like, "What fucking ad?" So I went into the ad manager. And for a Mother's Day card sale, 40% off if you're interested, he'd put an ad out on a budget of $1,000 a day. I managed to stop it when it got to 50 quid. I've paid the 50 quid and there's still an outstanding balance there of like 5 quid, which I told him I'm not paying it.
Cheeky little shit, huh?
Yeah. We know his name. We know who you are. We got a page back, but we've still got trouble with it. So I'm not sure if we're going to end up boycotting the page and just having the group, just what we'll call the group official. I don't know.
We'll find a way.
So I've actually got two shout outs to do. I didn't think we'd have to do these shout outs yet. Patrons. We have two patrons.
Woo! Yes.
So our first shout out is to Melissa.
Melissa.
And our second one goes out to Janine. So thank you. We promise we're going to have content at some point. You know, we're changing our schedules and...
Yeah.
We've got a lot of things to work out.
With how our schedule is now, we should hopefully have a bit more time on our hands to dedicate to some content.
And actually, speaking of Patreon, if you have any ideas, like, are you wanting more true crime? Or are you wanting more of us?
Acting the fuck.
We do that enough.
Acting the bollocks.
Are you wanting more of us? Give us ideas.
Do the work for us. That's what it sounded like. Give me ideas.
Yeah, do it for me.
So, are you ready to get into this week's case?
I suppose.
Right. Picture it. Colorado Springs.
Oh, here we fucking go.
Sunday, the 14th of January, 1990. A police officer is out on patrol when he gets a call to do a welfare check in the area. family members hadn't heard from the household in question, and they began to grow concerned. So the officer arrives at the home. He knocks on the door. No answer. He walks around the grounds of the property. He stops to look through a window. He sees a woman's body laid on the floor. He knocks on the window. There's no response. He pries open the window and enters the home. He checks the woman's vitals, and her body is cold to the touch.
So she's been gone a while.
Yeah, no good. He proceeds to move through the house. He also finds the bodies of four children. What is also found in the house? On the mantel above the fireplace, there is what looked to be a makeshift altar. And on this altar is a dead cat. So immediately it's like, okay, this is, you know, a cult ritualistic type killing.
Is it their cat? Or
I assume so, yeah. But then again, fucking cats, they just wander into people's houses, you wouldn't know.
Yeah, but they don't wander in someone's house, lay in the middle of an altar and commit suicide.
But if it's a cult, they're sacrificing this cat. Maybe the cult brought it with them.
That's what I mean. Did they bring it with them, or was it the house cat?
They could have done. I don't know.
I need to know these things.
Whose cow was it? We're back at it, but only whose cat was it? So you've got an entire household dead, including, we assume, their pet cat.
Or a stray. Or the cult's cat.
Or, yes. You got to keep all options open. Now, as for how the woman's body had been left, she was laid on the floor, her top had been pulled up, and her jeans were unzipped and sort of, you know, the tops are kind of folded over. So, with that visual, they assumed...
You mean like how you wear your trousers?
What?
You mean how you wear your trousers where you fold it off?
No, I don't mean like joggers when you're rolling them over. I mean like, if you have a pair of jeans, yeah?
Yeah.
And you unzip the fly,
mm-hmm.
The two sides of the jeans, like the two edges where, like, say the buttons are,
yeah, you have to
fold them over.
Okay.
So like,
yeah.
Think of like lads mag girl with the fucking shorts, denim shorts, like folded over. So basically like,
yee.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, with her laid there, the top pulled up, the jeans undone, they're assuming immediately a sexual assault has taken place. So as you can imagine as well, this attracted a lot of media attention. A woman, four children and their pet sacrificed.
Oh, they said pet then.
Well, I'm saying pet. You were assuming pet until you threw a spanner in the works.
Well, no. The reason why I'm fixated on the cat, right? So you're laughing at me now. But bear this in mind. If the detectives look into it and find out, but that family did not have a cat. Yeah. So it's either a stray or it's the cult's cat. You take it to the vets. You scan it
This was in 1990, though. I don't think they did microchipping then, did they?
Oh, just forget what I fucking said then.
But yeah, you have a woman. So we have a woman, four children, and their pet sacrificed on what would usually be a quiet Sunday afternoon in this neighbourhood. So the property was then swarmed by locals and the media. They're all trying to get a glimpse or gain some sort of knowledge of the murders. So, who was this family and why were they the victims of this tragic situation? The woman was 34-year-old Sophie Gerardo. Sophie was a single mother and said to have been very hardworking. She worked mainly low-paid jobs and always worked incredibly hard to provide for her children. And Sophie herself, she was one of 10 children and she had grown up in Trinidad. Sophie was said to have been a very generous person. She had been known to offer shelter to those in need of it. Situations like taking a teenager who'd been kicked out by their parents because they'd fallen pregnant, things like that.
Mm.
So she was just a very compassionate person.
Never understood that because it didn't really fix the pregnancy issue.
No, you're just being a dick. Take care of them.
Yeah.
Look after them. This person needs support now more than ever. So the children that were found in the house were Danny, age 9, Nash, aged 11, Mario, aged 13, and Mark, aged 15. Danny, Nash, and Mario, they were Sophie's sons, and Mark was actually her nephew. By the time the bodies had been found, their fingernails were black. So that's indicating they'd been dead for at least 3 days at this stage.
Why do the fingernails go black?
Just part of decomp.
Okay.
5 days previous to the discovery of their deaths on the 9th of January, Mark was at the house helping his Aunt Sophie move into her new home. She had just saved enough to finally get this home for her and her family. So she had literally just moved in, was about to start her life here with her kids. Now, as police are investigating the scene, they start to feel unwell, nauseated, and they also had abdominal cramps. And that's when they realise, carbon monoxide.
Oh.
They get the fuck out of there and they call a guy in to get a carbon monoxide reading. So when this...
So that's the end of the case? Is
not quite. We know the cause.
Yeah.
But we don't know...
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, how would you rig it? I don't...
Well, like I said, they get the fuck out of there and they call in a guy to get a reading on the levels of carbon monoxide.
Yeah.
So this guy arrives, he sticks his arm through the door and the tester is going off. It's at fatally high levels.
It's going off like an EMF detector on fucking Ghost Adventures. Is it only me who gets that?
For all my Zach Bagans fans out there. So to continue their investigation, they call in the fire department. They turn off the gas and they bring in, do you know those heavy duty fans? The ones they use to clear smoke after a fire?
Yeah.
So, yeah, they bring all the fans in and make sure the place is completely ventilated throughout. And due to the effects carbon monoxide can have, it explains a few things about the scene. So Sophie's top having been pulled up and her jeans unbuttoned was probably down to her trying to get some comfort and relief from the abdominal pain she would have been experiencing, not a sexual assault.
Hmm. I get unbuttoning the jeans, but pulling the top up.
Think about when you've had like a really good feed and you're like laid in bed.
Yeah, but
and
I
you
don't
just pull your top and be like, oh, Jesus.
I don't pull my top up. I'll unbutton my trousers.
Maybe it was hot. No, it wasn't. It was January in Colorado. Never mind. Scratch that. Scratch that. Their skin also had a pinkish tone to it. And that's another effect of severe carbon monoxide poisoning.
Mm.
So some other symptoms of carbon monoxide exposure include... headaches, dizziness, nausea, vomiting, stomach pain, shortness of breath, and difficulty breathing. High exposure levels can lead to an impaired mental state, vertigo, loss of coordination, breathlessness, fast heart rate, chest pain, muscle spasms, and in cases where there are very high levels, death within minutes. Now, is there anything you're wondering about from this scene?
No. Is this... Where's the husband?
She wasn't married. So, the altar.
Oh, yeah, yeah, shit.
The altar above the fireplace.
Yeah.
So if it's not some cult ritualistic type thing, what the fuck's going on?
And the cat. Oh, no, because the cat had died.
Exactly. The cat had just curled up on the mantle. You know, as cats do, they like to just find a spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the cat had also died of carbon monoxide poisoning. Now... the cat dying, it looks bad.
Hmm.
But the other stuff on the mantelpiece was just candles and, you know, other items.
So they only thought it was an altar because there was a cat there.
It doesn't look great, the dead cat there.
If it's curled up, it's not like it's gutted.
Well, this is the thing, because when they looked at the cat, you know, the initial thing was, oh, it's a dead cat. But further inspection, the cat wasn't sacrificed as such. It was, there was no like cuts or anything. It was just curled up.
That's what
dead.
I mean. It's not gutted. There's no blood.
No. No.
You'd expect a sacrifice to be blood.
Yeah, it'd be a bit messy of a situation. So there was no cult killing. It was the case of an entire family that had been killed through improper ventilation. So after an investigation of all the gas appliances in the home, they found the cause. And the cause was the heater. Or furnace. I might use those words interchangeably. We don't really say furnace over here. That's more of an American term, isn't it?
Furnace is completely different.
Furnace is a heating device for your home, isn't it? I kept hearing
no,
both.
No, furnace is more... isn't a furnace something you'd have outside?
No, I'm pretty sure a furnace is to heat your home. Whether
yeah,
no, it's like...
your father has one. That's a furnace.
No.
Do you remember playing Rust? They were furnaces.
No, a stove you're thinking of. And the stove in Rust, what you're talking about, was a heater. It was to heat your home.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was.
The furnaces were to cook
oh, yeah,
sulfur
they were,
and
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah, they were. Turns out I got that pretty wrong.
No, I think a furnace and a heater is completely different because people convert furnaces into like pizza ovens and stuff. because they have that like chimney.
Okay, but
with
I'm just
lid on the top.
I'm just telling you. This was how it was worded. The word furnace and heater were both used for the same object.
Maybe Yanks call heaters furnaces then.
It's just so if I use both words, someone's like, I thought you said this.
Yeah.
So like I said, the heater was the cause. The heat exchanger had been put in backwards. So basically, it was just pumping fumes into the home. Now, the thing about this is, you can't just fit it backwards. They're not designed like that. You'd have to like force it in to make that happen. So the first thing they do is they talk to Sophie's landlord. Sophie's landlord was Daryl Atkinson, a 72-year-old retired fireman. And he was understandably very distressed and he was nearly in tears over the deaths. He said, I've owned and rented this place for over 20 years and he'd never had any problems. He also said that he wasn't informed it had broken down or that there was any issues. In fact, whenever he had an issue, he had hired a licensed worker. The detective also talked to her sisters, Frances and Nellie. They asked her sisters about Sophie, her life, and anyone in her life. Was there anyone of note that they could then talk to?
Yeah.
Her sisters told the detective that Sophie had two boyfriends. And they knew about each other. And they did not like each other.
Right. So it's always the fella. Tell me the names, the first names of both of these blokes, and I'll tell you which one did it.
Nathan and Kevin.
Kevin.
Kevin. I knew you were going to say that.
Fucking Kevin.
So yeah, with that bit of sorry. So with that bit of information, the detective is obviously like, oh shit, tell us more. So he finds out who these two guys are and he tracks them down. Now, when speaking to one of her boyfriends, Nathan, he completely breaks down. He was genuinely distraught. They didn't believe that he had had anything to do with the deaths. He also tells detectives that he was the second of her boyfriends, meaning that he had entered into the relationship knowing she already had a partner.
Yeah.
But they said that he seemed to really genuinely have been in love with Sophie.
Yeah, and he would have, you know, broke down because he didn't know about it because it was Kevin.
Well, now they move on to Kevin. So,
if I was that detective and I'd got the names in front of me, I wouldn't have even gone anywhere near Nathan.
Kevin.
I would have gone straight for Kevin and locked him up.
It's a good thing you're not in law enforcement because poor fucking, I was going to say Kevin, any Kevins out there, don't stand a chance. So yeah, now they move on to her other boyfriend, Kevin. Kevin works for a local construction company. He knew a lot of tradesmen. He was also said to have been abusive to Sophie. So they're thinking, you know, he's abusive already. He's pissed off at Sophie about her relationship with Nathan. He's got a motive and opportunity.
Yeah.
So when they're speaking with Kevin, he admits that they fight all the time. He admits that he's been abusive towards Sophie. And he tells them that, yes, I have been very upset over her relationship with Nathan. He's completely forthcoming with all this information. And he also seems to be genuinely devastated over the news of the deaths. It doesn't seem right and they don't think it's him. Why would he volunteer all this information to make him look so likely to be the suspect?
Yeah.
So they don't think it's him. Who did it? So they go back and they talk to Daryl, Sophie's landlord, and he tells detectives that before Sophie moved in, his previous tenants had caused him a lot of trouble. A couple by the name of Marvin and Brenda Hogsett.
Marvin.
What?
Marvin.
Well, you're going with Marvin now. You don't like the name Marvin either. Does he sound like trouble to you, Neil?
Does sound like trouble. And he sounds like the sort who would kill someone in a cowardly way.
Well, Daryl thought so. Daryl was like, Marvin, he's no good. Marvin, that is so Marvin.
When he said he had bother with him, what, they wouldn't pay rent or?
So Daryl said that Marvin and Brenda left the property dirty. They didn't take care of the place in general. They had pets when they weren't allowed. And they had also been behind on their rent. So just not the best tenants.
Hmm.
And he also said that he actually had to force them out of the property. Daryl told detectives that maybe Marvin had tampered with the furnace. And he knew that Marvin was an air and heating guy.
Oh.
Mm.
Oh, he's fucked.
He fucked it. Were Sophie and the kids just collateral damage to an attack aimed at Daryl, Marvin's previous landlord?
See, if... Right, I don't want to sound like a fucking psychopath here, but I'm probably going to. This could have been the perfect crime.
How so?
Because he switched it, yeah? So all the fumes were going into the place.
Yeah.
Yeah? fuck off, wait a day, they're going to be done.
Yeah.
They didn't get found for 3 days. Go back the next day with a mask on, switch the filter background. The only reason why they're linking it is because the filter was still the wrong way round. So if you went back the next day, switched the filter background, fuck off. Because he's probably still got a set of keys.
Yeah.
If he lived there before.
Yeah.
This could have been the perfect
crime.
Or
even like the police officer really just pried the window open. He got in easily enough, didn't he?
Yeah.
So even if you didn't, I'm just saying if he didn't have the keys, that's not really relevant, but we shouldn't be helping the killer here, should we?
Well, no, it absolutely is relevant because if you had to pry the window open, then they'd know how you got in and stuff. Whereas if you have a key, there's no way of knowing. In fact, poor Daryl would have probably copped it.
Yeah. It's fucking ridiculous. Marvin. So, detectives knew that Brenda Hogsett still lived in the area, but she is now separated from Marvin. It's probably for the best, isn't it?
Yeah.
They met with Brenda, and she confirmed that, yes, Marvin was an experienced HVAC repairman. I don't know if that's HVAC or HVAC. I assume it's HVAC.
No, it is HVAC, isn't it?
I don't know.
Yeah, it is.
So, with that, Marvin would have had the training and experience to alter the furnace to essentially make it a death trap. Brenda also tells detectives about her time spent in that residence. There was one day that Brenda woke up, immediately had a headache, she was throwing up and just felt overall very unwell. Marvin was also said to have been feeling incredibly ill. So that day that they weren't feeling their best, Brenda's father had come over to the house that day for a visit. And when he saw just how ill they were, he immediately called an ambulance. So Brenda and Marvin were taken to the hospital. And the next thing Brenda remembers is waking up in her hospital bed and being told that the cause of her illness was carbon monoxide poisoning.
Oh.
She says that Marvin borrowed a carbon monoxide tester from his work and the heater had a very high reading. So is her story true or not?
I'd say so.
Didn't seem like she was lying. Detectives were like, okay. So next thing they do is they go to Marvin and he is now living in Denver. So he tells detectives the same story. They both ended up in hospital with carbon monoxide poisoning, and Marvin says he can prove it. He produces a bill from the hospital. It's clearly not Marvin, it can't be. If he was to tamper with the heater to fuck with Daryl, why would he do it while they're still in the property? It don't make any sense. So now there's the question, was Marvin the intended victim? The detective asks Marvin, does he have any idea who could have done this? Marvin replies, there's only one person who could have done this.
Daryl.
His former landlord, Daryl Atkinson.
So it were Daryl.
You know, and you were here shitting all over Marvin and Kevin. Poor Kevin. You know, I want to issue a formal apology to all the Kevins and Marvins out there. This is ridiculous. Marvin claims that while he was living there, he had actually called Daryl about the faulty appliance. Daryl had come over, he had a look and he told Marvin that, yeah, it's bollocks and it needs repairing. So with that, detectives are stunned. Daryl came across as this, you know, pleasant old man, hardworking, retired fireman. Nothing seemed off about him. So why would Daryl do this? Do you want to guess? Well, you can guess or I can just fucking tell you outright.
Well, he wanted a man, didn't he?
No, it's just because Daryl is a fucking landlord.
I don't know what that means.
He's a cheap bastard. Okay. And he wants to blame his tenants for everything.
Okay. Right, I will speak for both of us. We're not saying all landlords be up for doing murder.
I'm in no way saying he intended to murder someone, but that was the result, okay?
Have you heard about the Airbnb shit?
No. Oh, the camera thing.
What?
The camera thing, is that what you're on about?
No, there's supposed to be some sort of like, I don't know if it's a document.
The cleanup crew thing, is that what you're on about?
Yeah, and like, they have to, you keep it quiet. If there's been a murder in an Airbnb, you keep it quiet.
Some knowledge you actually gain from Wife of Crime, am I right?
Yes.
Weren't they discussing
yes.
it? Yeah. See, Wife of Crime, helping us all.
Russ.
So.
Is a man of many words.
All the wrong ones. So like I said, he's a landlord, he's a tight bastard. And that's exactly what Marvin tells the detectives. Daryl is a tight-fisted bastard. If anything ever needed fixing, he didn't call a licensed contractor, he would do it himself. Not only does he not know what he's doing, but he also fixes these issues as cheaply as possible.
Oh, so it's not malicious then, he's just put the filter in the wrong way. But they said you have to force it.
Right, It's not a malicious act, but you understand your actions have consequences, you know?
Oh, no, no, 100%. But I'm saying he didn't deliberately...
Yeah, it wasn't like, I'm going to snuff you out.
Yeah.
Daryl didn't say that.
Just, yeah.
Well, he might have done. I wasn't there.
Just a cheap bastard, like.
Yeah, prick. Daryl had previously told detectives that he had always hired licensed professionals, remember?
He did.
He also said that he had never had any issues with any appliances. So he's a lying bastard as well.
Yeah.
He knew the appliance was faulty and he was denying that fact. And there were also multiple witnesses to say he knew about the appliance. So the detective goes to Daryl's home to confront him about what he had done and the devastating results of his tight arse ways. So once he tells him, Daryl breaks down, the waterworks start, you know the fucking drill.
Yeah.
He tries to distance himself from the murders by saying, it was an accident, I didn't mean to. He just doesn't want to take responsibility, really.
I'm sorry, but like, if, right, I'm a Yorkshireman, so I'm quite cheap. But if I did something and it caused the deaths of five people,
mm-hmm.
the waterworks won't be coming on after I've been caught. I would be straight...
immediately devastated for what you had done.
I'd be straight to the police station and I'd be like, I tried fixing this and I've done it wrong.
It wasn't my fault, I'm from Yorkshire.
Is this the knuckle dragger fucking...
No, you've just said you're tight.
Oh.
You're tight-fisted fuck.
Okay.
It wasn't my fault I was raised this way.
Yeah.
It's in my blood.
Brilliant.
So like I said, he doesn't take any responsibility, but he says to detectives, if the court thinks I did something wrong... then I'll get on with it. Well, well done, Daryl.
Well, get on with it then.
So he asks the detective, what happens now? The detective tells Daryl, you'll probably make bond. Daryl asks, how much? He tells him, I don't know, probably about 20 grand.
What? More than that.
Well, that's what he says anyway. Daryl walks over to his stove, picks up a canister, opens it. It's stacked with cash.
Of course it is.
He takes out 20 grand in $100 bills. And the detective said that there was still plenty of cash left in there.
Smarmy bastard.
Yep.
Knobhead.
So there you go. Daryl was taken to jail. They book him in. And then he posts bail and was released. A day later, the detective hears a call on the radio. And he recognises the address. It's Daryl Atkinson's address. He goes to Daryl's home. And there he finds Daryl sat in his 1966 Oldsmobile. He took his own life through, you guessed it, carbon monoxide poisoning.
So has he done that to be a clever twat before he's gone, do you think?
I think it was just, because it's a common one that people will, you know, put the pipe through the window and just, it's a relatively painless way to go.
Yeah.
It's kind of, if you take a drink and you kind of just fall asleep and, you know.
See.
It came full circle there a bit, didn't it?
What I don't get though is... why, you know, before he posted for bail, why was he being so cocky and, you know, confident and then top him sent after?
What do you mean, cocky and confident?
Because he was like, well, I'll get through it, I'll get bail. Like,
I don't think
it
was
nothing.
I don't think that was the intention. Do you know what I mean? I think it was because you asked, like, what happens now? And they're like, well, you probably make bond. So he knew he could get out, but he knew he wasn't going to be... absolved of it. He was going to have to go to trial and da-da-da, you know. And I think, you know, like you said earlier, he clearly wasn't some sadistic killer. It wasn't maliciously murdering these people. But the fact of the matter is, he did cause the deaths of Sophie, Nash, Danny, Mario and Mark. He knew it was dangerous and he had no problem letting this happen to save himself a few quid.
Yeah.
And that's the story of the completely avoidable deaths of Sophie, Nash, Danny, Mario and Mark.
It's a good name for the title.
What?
The avoidable deaths.
I mean, like all murders in a way, I suppose, are avoidable. But this was just so fucking, it's so infuriating because just that you're just a scabby bastard.
Yeah.
You're so fucking tight that you're willing to kill this woman and four children.
Yeah.
Fuck you. What do you think of that one?
That was a doozy.
See, I was writing this up and I was thinking, this is an interesting one because it's kind of the ups and downs of, oh, it's them. Oh, it could be them. No, it's, you know what I mean?
Look at me. Daryl was one of the first mentioned. I didn't even think of him.
You were like, fuck Kevin.
Tunnel vision.
Fuck Marvin.
Yeah, a tunnel vision for Kevin.
You weren't having it. You're not about Kevin's
maybe
bullshit.
Maybe it's a good thing I'm not in law enforcement.
Maybe it is.
Imagine me with a gun. I literally would be. Shoot first, ask questions later.
Yes.
So what have we got for an oddity?
So our oddity today is Tommy Cooper. You know what happened.
The Tommy Cooper.
The Tommy Cooper, yes.
Yeah, my dad was there.
So Tommy Cooper was a comedian and magician, and he was fairly well known, at least in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
On the 15th of April, 1984, Tommy Cooper was performing at the West End Theatre for Live from Her Majesty's. He was about to perform his magic cloak trick. So his assistant draped the cloak over him, and Tommy slumps to the floor. Everyone's laughing, thinking, Tommy, that is so Tommy. People working on the show thought he was just improvising.
Mm.
People soon realised that there was in fact something wrong. They drew the curtains and cut to adverts. So also performing that night was Les Dennis and Dustin Gee. And
Les Dennis, he's from Family Fortunes?
I think so. I think Family Fortunes.
I was going to say Family Feuds, but that's American Family Fortunes.
Family Fortunes. So yeah, anyway, they were performing that night also. They were quickly brought on stage to kind of keep the show going as others scrambled to try and seek medical attention for Tommy Cooper.
That's the important thing.
Well, yeah, clearly the show must go on. So unfortunately, Tommy died of a heart attack on stage as it was also being broadcast to millions of viewers. Another dark connection to this is Dustin Gee, one of the comics they had rushed on stage. Less than 2 years later, while performing at a pantomime, Dustin also suffered a heart attack. During the performance, he grabbed his left arm before being brought backstage. He reportedly said to Les Dennis, because they were like a comedy duo.
Mm.
He reportedly said to Les Dennis, I think I'm dying, before collapsing, and was then brought to hospital, where he would die 2 days later. I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole. There's quite a selection of performers who have died on stage or had some type of incident and died following it. But isn't that mad that happened to Tommy Cooper and then the other person who was there happened to him only a couple of years later? Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember my dad telling me about that with Tommy Cooper. Because he said, because it was a sack, weren't it?
What?
You said a cloak, but I'm pretty sure my dad said he climbed into a sack, the sack was knotted, and then he just collapsed. And my dad said everyone else in the audience was laughing, thinking it was part of the act.
Yeah.
And my dad said, I knew it. I knew that wasn't part of the act.
Well, Jeff's very intuitive.
He is. He's probably seen him do that act God knows how many times. See, Jeff is going to be in this podcast quite a bit.
Well, he shouldn't be a policeman. I think we've established that. But he has a great career in comedy. Or sorry, not comedy. Stage production. He knows when shit's hitting the fan.
Literally.
Well, not literally.
Oh, no, not literally.
There you go.
All right. Well, thoroughly enjoyed that. You don't enjoy it.
You seemed to like having a little bit of a guess of who the suspect was, didn't you?
I do. I like playing the detective.
Mm.
I'm not doing so well so far, I don't think. Is there anything I've got in any of the episodes?
Well, see, this is something that winds me up about you. When we watch something, I don't mind if you're watching it and trying to piece it together. You'd be like, oh, it's him. It's him. I know it's him. And I'm like, just fucking watch it. Enjoy it. Like,
well, what's the point of the rest of the show? It's him.
You're one of those people that will like piece things together, but you might forget a crucial bit and you'll hang someone out to dry. I hope to fuck you're never on a jury because it's not going to end well. Thank you so much for listening. Find us on Patreon, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. If you have a case suggestion, or maybe even your own story, email us at mortalmusingspodcast@gmail.com.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at chumbacasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.